Thank you for downloading Producer's Pick from Sounds True, a podcast dedicated to bringing you moving, captivating, and intriguing selections from our programs. In this podcast, the producers at Sounds True have chosen a selection from a program that they've worked on, which caught their attention as a unique or special moment in the recording process. This week's episode, Ego Mind versus Global Mind, comes from the audio program Awakening the Global Mind by Ashok Gangadine. Mitchell Clute, a producer at Sounds True, recorded this program with Ashok at the Sounds True studio. Here's what Mitchell had to say about this week's producer's pick.
In his program Awakening the Global Mind, author and professor of philosophy Ashok Gangadine weaves together diverse strands of knowledge from the Greek philosophers to the Eastern mystics to explore an emerging global wisdom. Using the power of language, he urges us to rewrite our own linguistic operating system with a new spiritual grammar so that we can move from what he refers to as ego-mental thinking to the universal consciousness he calls logos. Timely and thought-provoking, his cross-cultural, cross-disciplinary approach combines a philosopher's mind with a mystic soul for a unique take on awakening. Here he explores how we can begin to move into a unified, integral viewpoint on life.
The entire program, Awakening the Global Mind, is available at soundstrue.com. And now our producer's pick, Ego Mind versus Global Mind, with Ashok Gangadine.
We've entered an incredible journey, a mystery journey, perhaps the most deep mystery of all, because we've suggested that all of our great wisdom teachers, if we step back from local views and open up a global lens and begin to see the astounding patterns of wisdom teachings across the ages, and to see that how we use our minds is of ultimate importance, it's really the ultimate technology. I hope we see that, because when we use the word technology, we think of things, of course, in science and technology out, internet and telephones and airplanes. But, you know, they're all coming from consciousness. And we make our worlds with our consciousness. And that's what we don't appreciate enough. And that's the ultimate technology, is the technology of consciousness. So I'd like us to get used to that idea of a technology of consciousness, minding. How am I minding? Because our wisdom traditions have shown us that if I'm minding from an ego-mental process, a mind-operating system, and we're not educated to pay attention to that, then all kinds of dysfunctions will follow, because apparently it's not a mature use of our consciousness. Reality is much more deep and interconnected and holistic and dialogic. And if our mind-operating system is not touching into that profound dynamic interactivity of reality, we're out of reality. And if we're out of reality, we're going to suffer. We're going to have ill being. Our being is going to be sick. And that's another word we're not really familiar with in our diagnostic. We don't find our physicians saying, "You've got an ontological disorder." You know, we don't talk that way, but yet our great teachers are saying that if your ontology is messed up, if your being, your minding, if your connection with reality is disconnecting from yourself and from the source of life, this is going to create a deep disaster in terms of the competence of living and a quality of life. So we must pay attention to how we're using our minds. So the technology of mind is important. And in our first encounter with this mystery, we saw, why is it a mystery? Because all of our great teachers and traditions have been saying there is some primal force, a primal reality, whatever you call it. You don't have to use God talk. You could just talk energy, if you'd like, if you're more comfortable with that, or calling it Chi or Tao or Om or whatever, with Allah, Yahweh. All of these are names for the first logos. And what I pointed out in our first encounter is that we seem to be hitting barriers and walls in how we're using our minds. It cuts us off from that. And if we're cut off from that fundamental reality, we're going to have all kinds of difficulties in our life. We're not going to thrive. So everything turns on that. And so what we're going to see now is that we really need to do something about that. we said that if we are only looking at this from my local worldview, so if I'm a scientist, a physicist, let us say, and that's the way I think the best way to get to reality is through my science, and that's the lens I'm using, most of us don't realize we're using a lens in our mind. Our culture trains us to see the world in a certain way, and sometimes in complex ways. We'll pick up on that a little later. So to be, for example, picking out the case in America, to be an ordinary American, doesn't mean you have one cultural world. You have multiple lens very often. You could be a believing Christian or a Jew or a Muslim. That's one lens. It's even complex there because there's so many different ways to develop those. But let's just call that one lens. And I'm a scientist. That's another lens. The lens of science, that's how I see the world. I could see it as a civic American in the democratic space, and so on. And we're not taught the competence of recognizing the lenses we use to understand how we came to them and how it colors my world and my experience and my reality. We are not taught how to move across in between worlds or have a dialogue between them. And this can create deep fractures and fissures and chasms within my inner life and my interpersonal life and my relationship to nature. But we're not taught that. So I would like us to become aware of the lens we use, because we're now going, in this session, we're going to go into a profound, incredible, fast-forward journey from ancient Greek thought into the contemporary scene. We're going to cover 2,500 years of the most gifted minds in the whole European tradition and the streams that are coming together in the European tradition, including the formation of science and the shaping of our modern world, our American democracy, for example, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, all of these different deep movements in culture across the planet is being moved by ideology and shifting in consciousness and ways of thinking. The rise of science is a particular shaping of a lens to develop the empirical and scientific method, one amongst many. So we're going to go on a journey to see how these lenses have been developing and shifting to bring out our culture. The whole Marxist revolution, when Marx responded to Hegel, was an incredible shift in worldview. And Marx, of course, led to with Lenin, the Communist Manifesto, and in Das Kapital, he talked about capitalism, and of course, a whole communist world emerged out of that. Imagine, the world we're living in is shaped by the lenses that have been developed by the great grammarians of history. And we don't really appreciate that enough. In the European Enlightenment, with Locke and other geniuses, Descartes and others, shaped in the 17th century the European Enlightenment, as it's called, because they were beginning to see that reason and the truths of reason, if we could see them, will take us out of our localism and get universal truths for humanity. That was a great enlightenment. It led to the American Revolution, the American democratic formation, to realize that we all have adequate powers of reason. One person, one vote. And each of us is sacred. All of that was evolving over centuries. And so I'm just trying to set the theme that the culture that has shaped the world, the living reality, is deeply connected with our evolution of our consciousness and the ways and patterns of thinking and the lenses we shape. And in our first session, I pointed out that we didn't have even a common name for this fundamental reality that was being named differently in our different dialects. Just even call it a dialect or a font is already a revealing thing to say, because we don't think of calling it Shunyata or calling it Yahweh. Are both speaking about the same fundamental reality. But I'd like to boldly take that point on now and suggest that, and it took me decades of work as a philosopher trying to open this place of global first philosophy. It was no such area as global first philosophy. Remember, first philosophy is a very noble dimension of all of our wisdom traditions. It comes from the idea that there is something first. We need to articulate it. We need to come into relationship with it, and we need to sustain our relationship with it to flourish and thrive. That is first philosophy. And so the Tao language is first philosophy, the Om language is first philosophy, the Yahweh language is first philosophy, the Christ language is first philosophy, the Allah, the Logos, these are all first philosophies. And believe it or not, even in science, when we are trying to name what is the ultimate energy or stuff of the universe, what is it made of, is it energy? That's first philosophy as well. We can't get away from this. But here's the point, and I hinted at this before, that there's got to be only one first, because it's infinite, and the infinite must be somehow connected. And we don't have a language for that. We don't have the literacy in that. So I'm going to, as I did in my work over decades, to tap this deep logic